All right, folks, second hour of the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the studios in Round Rock, Texas. Phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Yes, I know. We've already taken a couple of calls, but that's okay. They're open now. So you want to call in with a question, you want to vent, rant, do whatever you want to do, that's fine. So I'm going to read to you number 4 of paragraph 24. American taxpayers have a public interest in the outcome of this investigation as it pertains to corruption of public officials and trustworthiness of the FBI and top officials at the Department of Justice and thefts of federal cash. Paragraph 25. A special counsel is necessary to examine acts of collusion between Hillary Clinton, Andrew McCabe and James Comey, including obstruction of active FBI investigations. Paragraph 26, by example, there's damning proof of obstruction by Andrew McCabe, who blocked transfer of the FBI investigation from the Bronx, New York office of the FBI, a Democratic stronghold, to the more high-powered Manhattan office, which possessed more resources to investigate the allegations. McCabe also blocked the presentation of evidence to a grand jury, as would be routine for any other citizen. Paragraph 27, another example of how famous note-taker James Comey made no written record of the FBI's interview with Hillary Clinton regarding her email server and mishandling of classified intelligence. Like Andrew McCabe, Comey also declined to submit evidence to a grand jury that would have resulted in major indictments for any other citizen. Paragraph 28, receiving payments of stolen federal dollars made both men susceptible to blackmail. But there is a double conflict of interest for Comey, whose brother is the tax accountant for the Clinton Foundation. Peter Comey was potentially involved in two aspects of the crimes, the first being unlawful acts to acquire the stolen federal dollars at Fort MacDill. He was also a possible subject of the FBI investigation into the pay-to-play scams exposed by Hillary Clinton's emails from the State Department. Paragraph 29, there are many other examples of obstruction, unnatural protection, and shocking failure to follow through on the FBI investigations by Andrew McCabe and James Comey. The upshot is that after receiving major financial payment of stolen federal dollars, McCabe and Comey blocked routine actions by the FBI and declined to report the investigation to a grand jury for prosecution. Tens of millions of Americans have been enraged that individuals with less power have spent years in federal prison for a fraction of the crimes committed by Hillary Clinton and other top Democrats. Paragraph 30. An internal affairs office in every police department of the United States would automatically subject these two officials to an internal investigation on account of the known cash payments from Hillary Clinton and would re-examine evidence to determine if a grand jury should have been convened to review evidence against Hillary and her cohorts. Paragraph 31. As part of its investigation, a special counsel must re-examine with fresh eyes, number one, Hillary's criminal mishandling of classified intelligence, and number two, dozens of pay-to-play scams exposed in her emails, which demonstrated how the Secretary of State routinely offered favorable policy decisions in exchange for private cash donations to the Clinton Foundation. Number 32. Thanks to WikiLeaks, Americans have read what's in Hillary's classified emails, which she tried to hide using a private server. We know that crimes were committed. There's no point denying it. Until the American people get justice, corruption has won. That won't be tolerated, Mr. Sessions. Paragraph 33. A special independent counsel is necessary to determine whether Comey's brother Peter, who reportedly received $6 million from the Clinton Foundation for tax accounting, was involved in obfuscating or double bookkeeping in the pay-to-play scams, and or if his powerful brother at the FBI, James Comey, was influenced to protect his family member in exchange for a major cash infusion. Is this all starting to make sense in light of the shows that I've done in the past regarding these little incidents, folks? Paragraph 34. Because of the 28 million reactivated the CIA's Operation Pegasus, the special counsel should also keep eyes open for possible ties to Seth Rich's murder investigation and several other suspicious deaths, including Sean Lucas, the lead attorney in the DNC fraud case on behalf of Bernie Sanders supporters, John Jones, the attorney for Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, who got pushed in front of a subway train, and John Ash, who died of a crushed larynx while lifting weights several days before he was scheduled to testify in the DNC fraud case. Pegasus was a team of retired professional CIA assassins pulled back into service for the purpose of enforcement, after all. That's what they were paid to do. Enforcement is their modus operandi. Paragraph 35, if nothing else, the payments to McCabe and Comey created a wedge for top Democrats to push a policy of obstruction of the Seth Rich murder investigation for the sake of self-preservation. Paragraph 36, Mr. Sessions, there is no argument for your recusal from the decision to appoint a special counsel. This has zero ties to the Russia investigation underway by Robert Mueller. It falls under a completely separate investigation. Possible witnesses in this case are legitimate persons of interest in this case. Based on cash payments they are known to have received from the United States Treasury, it must be handled separately. Paragraph 37. My team has a legitimate personal stake in submitting this request for special counsel because Hillary Clinton grabbed our team's lawful rewards for orchestrating the recovery of the $80 billion, as this affidavit explains. We are adamant on this point. Justice for my team requires, number one, criminal prosecution of all parties who engaged in the conspiracy to receive newly recovered stolen federal funds from Hillary Clinton, and, number two, full payment of our lawful whistleblower rewards. We're not seeking percentages or billion-dollar payouts. Each of us seeks a one-time reward equal to the reward paid to Brad Birkenfeld after taxes, though we recovered vastly more stolen federal cash than Birkenfeld did. Thus, paying us would not burden the Treasury. Our expectations are very reasonable. We are very frustrated and angry that others have profited from our work and escaped justice for their corruption. I assure you, Mr. Sessions, my team will keep fighting until we get our rewards. If you work with us, federal inmate Stearns has got more stash than we could still recover. Paragraph 38, our claim for whistleblower rewards was filed first with the United States Treasury Department on February 3, 2015, in the federal court in July of 2015, and finally with the IRS ICE office in Utah on September 2, 2016. Paragraph 39, in point of fact, our actions were known to almost every Democrat in the United States Senate by the summer of 2015. We sought the help of Mr. Steve Ricchetti, Chief of Staff to Vice President Biden, and Senate Democrats to urge Loretta Lynch to appoint an assistant U.S. attorney to accept our court case filed in July of 2015. That was necessary to go after the $80 billion and $1 trillion at Citibank slated to come off time deposit on November 21, 2015. That fell on Obama's watch. All of the state Democrat and Vice President Biden's office had total knowledge of the monies prior to the payout to Hillary Clinton and Jill McCabe's campaigns in October of 2015. Paragraph 40. In light of Hillary's payment to Jill McCabe, two women Democrats who received stolen federal monies for their campaigns, we feel compelled to urge a special counsel to investigate whether Hillary Clinton and Steve Ricchetti orchestrated donations to other women Democrats running for the U.S. State or Senate or the House of Representatives as well, in order to grease the wheels and allow more Democrats to share her plunder from the federal treasury. Paragraph 41, we want to underscore that none of us ever worked for Hillary Clinton or the Clinton Foundation. None of us ever consented to dedicate any part of our rewards to any Democrat running for office. We are bloody furious that our rewards got stolen by more powerful individuals who abuse their access to high-ranking officials in Vice President Biden's office and the Justice Department. Paragraph 42. We are appalled that Senate Democrats watched us work and subsequently concocted a scheme whereby they could profit from the recovery of funds still off the Treasury books. That includes Senator Claire McCaskill, Senator Sherrod Brown, Senator Debbie St- Stabenow, Senator Tammy Baldwin, Senator Ben Cardin, Senator Tim Kaine, Senator Elizabeth Warren, all of whom I pushed heavily for action in the $1 trillion recovery. Did they profit from this newly recovered federal funds like Hillary and Jill McCabe? And what happened with the $1 trillion? Are Democrats really so lazy that no action was taken to secure that recovery? Those individuals particularly have some explaining to do. Paragraph 43, and what about their often proclaimed devotion to women? Equal opportunity, equal pay for equal work. Those were big campaign slogans of 2016. Yet in reality, Democrats exploited and cheated real-life women of our lawful rewards. They used women as campaign props. That in itself is not a crime, but when top Democrats stole from my team and grabbed our awards off the federal treasury to pay their campaign expenses, their hypocrisy took a criminal turn. And for that, my team demands justice. The American public has a strong interest in obtaining justice as well. Paragraph 44. Truly, to pull this off required approvals from Loretta Lynch and Vice President Biden's chief of staff, in addition to obvious scheming by Hillary Clinton and Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe. How much did Virginia Senator Tim Kaine know about Terry McAuliffe's plan to rob the Treasury with Hillary Clinton? In conclusion, we are convinced the points raised in this affidavit fully justify the appointment of a special counsel to investigate Andrew McCabe, James Comey, and other top Democrats involved in the theft of newly recovered stolen federal funds. This must be addressed, and my team must get paid our lawful rewards. Which Democrats have stolen from our highly successful five-year recovery project that has netted $87 billion with $1 trillion in the pipeline? With all respect to you, Mr. Sessions, if you don't take action to punish these officials, we will take public action ourselves. My team has a personal stake in this, and we will see it through to the very end. Our rewards must be paid. Sincerely, Susan Lindauer. Well, this girl is definitely no nonsense, and she's not ready to make nice. I have to say I'm proud to know this girl. And I've known her for a long time, folks. I've known her since 2007. You know what's ironic is I've known her for so many years. I've had her on my show, 25, 30 times. I've never met her in person. Isn't that ironic? I've never met this girl in person. But I respect what she's done. I respect what she's went through. I respect the guts, the tenacity that this girl has. And she meant what she said. She didn't back down. She never changed. She never wavered. She never whimpered. She never caved into these people, even back through the time they held her in prison, which is what's happening now to the Bundys, I might remind you, which is what's happening now to Tom LaCavara. Certain people out there do not give up. So if and hopefully when Tom LaCavara comes back to RBN, I want you to welcome him. But in the meantime, I want you to take some time and write him a letter and tell him, if you were a listener of Tom LaCavara, folks, write him a letter. Tell him that you miss him. Tell him that whoever gave him the information that his show was canceled was not true. Now, that's what I heard happened. Okay, so much for that. So anyway, let's see. So who are we talking about here? Well, we're talking about Hillary Clinton. And, you know, you take a trip back, and by the way, I want to put a shout-out to Pat in Arkansas because she sends me so many articles. The Arkansas connections, we just talked about it. We talked about Chip Tatum. We talked about that, you know, back during the payoff that he got from the Iran-Contra deal, running the cocaine at, you know, Mena, Arkansas, all that stuff that involved the Clintons. Take a sip of water here. But going back to the 1950s, folks, when Bill Clinton was 7 years old, his family moved from Hope, Arkansas, to the longtime mob resort of Hot Springs, Arkansas. Here, Al Capone is said to have had a permanent rights to suite 443 of the Arlington Hotel. Clinton's stepfather is a gun-brandishing alcoholic who loses his Buick franchise through mismanagement and his own pilfering. He physically abuses his family, including the young Bill. His mother is a heavy gambler with mob ties, and according to the FBI and local police officials, his uncle Raymond to whom young Bill turns for wisdom and support is a colorful car dealer, a slot machine owner, and a gambling operator who thrives, except when his house is firebombed, on the fault line of criminality. Paul Besson, Hot Springs, a prosecutor. In Hot Springs, growing up here, you were living a lie. You lived a lie because you knew that all of these activities were illegal. I mean, as soon as you got old enough to be able to read newspaper, you knew that gambling in Arkansas was illegal. Prostitution was illegal. And so you lived this lie. So you have to find some way to justify that to yourself. And, you know, you justify it by saying, well, you know, it's okay here. Virginia Kelly, Clinton's mother. Hot Springs was so different. We had wide open gambling. For one thing, it was so wide open that it never occurred to me that it was illegal. It really didn't until it came to a vote about whether we were going to legalize gambling or not. I never was so shocked. Hot Springs before the Clintons. Back in the 1930s, Hot Springs represented the western border of organized crime in the United States with a local syndicate headed by Oney Madden, a New York killer who had taken over the mob's resort in Arkansas. Oney Madden was an English-born gang member who had been arrested more than 40 times in New York by the time he was 21 years old. Madden got the assignment from his boss, Meyer Lansky. Does that ring a bell, folks? The plan for Arkansas was modeled on an earlier one in which Governor Huey Long opened a Swiss bank account into which the mob would put $3 to $4 million annually for the right to run casinos in the state. Meyer Lansky then moved to Hot Springs, where he hired Madden, the former operator of Harlem's Cotton Club. And according to one account, the Hot Springs setup was so luxurious and safe that it became known as a place for gangsters on the lam to hole up until the heat blew over. Hot Springs was where Lucky Luciano was arrested and brought back for trial, prosecuted by Thomas E. Dewey, according to one account. And Dewey proclaimed Luciano public enemy number one. And a grand jury returned a criminal indictment against him that carried a maximum penalty of 1,950 years. He was arrested in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and extradited back to New York. And there in New York, State Supreme Court, he was tried, and on June 7th, the verdict of guilty was returned, and 11 days later, he was sentenced to a total of from 30 to 50 years in state prison. It was the longest sentence ever handed out for compulsory prostitution. The Dice Man. There is evidence that many syndicate groups became involved in Hot Springs. Oney Madden was the overseer of everything and watched out for the New York mob's interests. Morris Kleinman, who was one of the founding gangsters of the Cleveland Syndicate, spent much of his time in Hot Springs. It is rumored that the Cleveland boys had pieces of the profits from Hot Springs gambling, and Johnny Roselli, an upper-level member of the Chicago mob, was a silent partner in many Hot Springs casinos in the 40s and 50s, as was Frank Costello. All of these groups used local operators as fronts, a system perfected by the Cleveland Syndicate in Ohio, Florida, and Kentucky. And since Hot Springs was a very popular tourist spot, the command went out from different syndicates that there should be no murders carried out in Hot Springs. There would be the rule in Las Vegas, too. If bodies littered the streets like in Chicago, it would only hurt business. Also, petty crimes like burglary and armed robbery were not to be tolerated. If the suckers weren't comfortable, they wouldn't come to Hot Springs. Oney Madden laid the groundwork for gangsters on the lam to hide out in Hot Springs. The city had a resort-like atmosphere and elegant nightlife, with people coming and going all the time. This was the perfect situation to hide mobsters who couldn't be seen in their hometowns. Al Capone would stay at the Arlington Hotel when things got too hot in Chicago. That was back in the 30s. The 1960s, a federal investigation concludes that Hot Springs has the largest illegal gambling operation in the United States. Bill Clinton goes to Georgetown University, where he finds a mentor and Professor Carol Quigley. Quigley writes, and I quote, that the two political parties should represent opposed ideals and policies. It's a foolish idea. Instead, the two parties should be almost identical. The policies that are vital and necessary for America are no longer subjects of significant disagreement, but are disputable only in detail, procedure, priority, or method. Unquote. Bill Clinton, according to several agency sources interviewed by biographer Roger Morris, works as a CIA informer, while briefly and erratically a Rhodes Scholar in England, although he never graduated from that. Although without visible means of support, he travels around Europe and the Soviet Union, staying at the ritziest hotel in Moscow. During this period of U.S. government is still well-educated assets such as Clinton as part of Operation Chaos, a major attempt to break student resistance to the war and the draft. According to former White House FBI agent Gary Aldrich, Clinton is told by Oxford officials that he is no longer welcome there. I hear the music. Phone's not ringing. 800-313-9443. We'll be back and continue with this. The life of Bill Clinton and Hillary. See you on the other side.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's I-C-A-N-G-E-T, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Bill Clinton and his friend Jim McDougal get a job in the office of Senator William Fulbright. The Washington Post will later write that McDougal was interested in making money while Clinton was obsessed with political stature. After becoming involved in politics, Wellesley graduate Hillary Rodham will order her senior thesis sealed from public view. 1969, Bill Clinton fails to report to his duty station at the University of Arkansas ROTC. Reclassified 1A on October 30th, 1969, as enlistment with Army Reserves is revoked by Colonel E. Holmes. 1974, 27-year-old Clinton, only months out of Yale Law School, is back in Arkansas, eager to run for Congress. Roger Morris writes later, a relative unknown, he faces an imposing field of rivals in the Democratic primary and beyond. In the general election, a powerful Republican incumbent. Yet as soon as he enters the race, Clinton enjoys a decisive 7-to-1 advantage in campaign funds over his nearest Democratic competitor and will spend twice as much as his well-supported GOP opponent. It begins with a quiet meeting at his mother's house in Hot Springs around the kitchen table, as Virginia Clinton will describe the scene. Avid young Billy meets with two of his most crucial early backers, Uncle Raymond Clinton, a prosperous local Buick dealer, and family friend and wealthy businessman Gabe Crawford. And as they talk, Mr. Crawford offers the candidate unlimited use of his private plane. And Uncle Raymond not only provides several houses around the district to serve as campaign headquarters, but will secure a $10,000 loan to Bill from the First National Bank of Hot Springs, an amount then equal to the yearly income of many Arkansas families. And together, the money in aircraft and other gifts, including thousands more in secret donations, will launch Mr. Clinton in the most richly financed race in the annals of Arkansas, and ultimately onto the most richly financed political career in American history. Though he loses narrowly, his showing is so impressive, especially in his capacity to attract such money and favors, that he rises rapidly to become state attorney general, then governor, and eventually, with much the same backing and advantage, president of the United States. No mere businessman with a spare plane, Gabe Crawford presided over a backroom bookie operation that was one of Hot Springs' most lucrative criminal enterprises, and the inimitable Uncle Raymond, who had also played a pivotal behind-the-scenes role in keeping young Bill out of the Vietnam draft, was far more than an auto dealer. In the nationally prominent bout of vice and corruption that was Hot Springs from the 1920s to the 1980s, it barely concealed casinos generated more income than Las Vegas well into the 60s. The uncle's Buick agency and other businesses and real estate were widely thought to be facades for illegal gambling, drug money laundering, and other ventures in which Raymond was the partner. He was a minion of the organized crime overlord who controlled the American Middle South for decades. New Orleans boss Carlos Marcello, or Mafia Kingfish, as his biography John Davis called him. Moving on to 1976, Bill Clinton is elected Attorney General of Arkansas. Two Indonesian billionaires come to Arkansas. Mokhtar Riady and Liam So Leong are close to Suharto. Riady is looking for an American bank to buy and finds Jackson Steffens, with whom he forms Steffens Finance. Steffens will broker the arrival of, guess what, BCCI to this country and steer BCCI's founder, Hassan Abedi, to Burt Lance. Riady's teenage son is taken on as an intern by Steffens Incorporated, and he later says that he was sponsored by Bill Clinton. 1977, Hillary Clinton joins the Rose Law Firm, and apparently because of pressure from Indonesia, Riady withdraws his bid to buy Lance's 30% share of the National Bank of Georgia. Instead, a BCCI frontman buys the shares, and Abedi moves to secretly take over Financial General, later First American Bank shares, later the subject of the only BCCI-connected scandal to be prosecuted in the United States. 1978, Bill Clinton is elected governor. The Clintons and the McDougals buy land in the Ozarks for $203,000 with, well, mostly borrowed funds. The Clintons get 50% interest with no cash down. The 203-acre plot, known as Whitewater, is 50 miles from the nearest grocery store. The Washington Post will later report that some purchasers of lots, many of them retirees, put up houses or cabins. Others slept in vans or tents, hoping to be able to live off the land. And more than half the purchasers will lose their plots thanks to the sleazy form of financing used. I hear the break. We'll be back in three. I'll continue with the life of Bill Clinton. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and, you know, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I can't believe, I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promote stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host. Yes, and so, 2 months after commencing the Whitewater scam, Hillary Clinton invests $1,000 in cattle futures, and within a few days, surprisingly, she has a $5,000 profit. And before bailing out, she earns nearly $100,000 on her investment. Many years later, several economists will calculate that the chances of earning such returns legally, guess what the odds were, folks? 1 in 250 million. You think she had some inside information going on there? I think so. Anyway, I'm cleaning my glasses, folks. Governor Clinton appoints Jim McDougal an economic development advisor. Bill Clinton's mother hangs out at the racetrack with mobsters and other local figures, including Dan Lassiter, who breeds racehorses in Kentucky and Florida and has a box at the track next to hers. Mrs. Clinton introduces Lassiter to Roger Clinton. And more than a few Little Rock insiders believe Hillary Clinton is having an affair with Vince Foster. Roger Clinton develops a 4-gram-a-day cocaine habit, getting his stuff from New York and Medellin suppliers based, as one middleman will later testify, on who his brother was. Charlene Wilson is one of his dealers. Dan Lassner will give Roger work and loan him $8,000 to pay off a drug debt. Nice group of people. Juanita Broderick, a volunteer in Clinton's gubernatorial campaign, will later claim she was attacked by Clinton and her lip almost bitten off. According to Roger Morris and Partners in Power, a young woman lawyer in Little Rock will later claim she was accosted by Clinton this year and that when she recoiled, he forced himself on her, biting and bruising her. Deeply affected by the assault, the woman decided to keep it all quiet for the sake of her own hard-won career and that of her husband. When the husband later saw Clinton in the 1980 Democratic Convention, he delivered a warning, and he said, "If you ever approach her, I'll kill you." Not even seeing fit to deny the incident, Bill Clinton sheepishly apologized and duly promised never to bother her again. 1979, Charlene Wilson will testify in a 1990 federal drug probe that she began selling cocaine to Roger Clinton as early as this year, 1979. She will also tell reporters that she sold 2 grams of cocaine to Clinton's brother at the Little Rock nightclub, Le Bistro, then witnessed Bill Clinton consume the drug. She said, "I watched Bill Clinton lean up against a brick wall," Wilson reveals to the London Telegraph, Ambrose Evans Pritchard, 1995. She said he was so messed up that night, he slid down the wall into a garbage can and just sat there like a complete idiot. Wilson also describes gathering at Little Rock's Coachman Inn between 1979 and 1981, where she saw Clinton using cocaine quite avidly with friends. Drug prosecutor Gene Duffy will say that she has no doubt that Wilson was telling the truth. The Clintons and McDougals form Whitewater Development Company. Shifting gears up to the 1980s. Governor Clinton appoints Webb Hubbell to head a new state ethics commission. First task, to weaken ethics legislation currently under consideration by exempting the governor from some of its most rigorous provisions. Arkansas becomes a major center of gun running, drugs, and money laundering. The IRS warns other law enforcement agencies of the state's enticing climate. According to Clinton biographer Roger Morris, operatives go into banks with duffel bags full of cash, which bank officers then distribute to tellers in sums under $10,000 so they don't have to report the transaction. Charlene Wilson, according to investigative reporter Ambrose Evans Pritchard, flies cocaine from a pickup point in Texas. Other drugs, she and others say, are stuffed into chickens for shipping around the country. Wilson also serves as the lady with the snow at toga parties attended, she reports, by Bill Clinton. According to Wilson, "I lived in Little Rock, Arkansas, okay, and I worked at a club called Le Bistro's, and I met Roger Clinton there. Governor Bill Clinton, a couple of his state troopers that went with him wherever he went. Roger Clinton had come up to me and asked me if I could give him some coke. You know, he asked for my one-hitter," which was a one-hitter is a very small silver device that you stick up your nose when you just squeeze it and a snort of cocaine will go up there. "And I watched Roger hand what I had given him to Governor Clinton, and he just kind of turned around and walked off." Investors Daily or Business Daily would later write that Sally Perdue, a former Miss Arkansas and Little Rock talk show host who said she had an affair with then-Governor Clinton in 1983, told the London Sunday Telegraph that he once came over to her house with a bag full of cocaine. He had all the equipment laid out like a real pro. In the 1990s, Jennifer Flowers tells Sean Hannity's WABC talk radio show that he smoked marijuana in my presence and offered me the opportunity to snort cocaine if I wanted to. "I wasn't into that. Bill clearly let me know that he did cocaine, and I know people that he knew did cocaine. He did tell me that when he would use a substantial amount of cocaine, that his head would itch so badly that he would become self-conscious at parties where he was doing this, because all he wanted to do while people were talking to him is stand around and scratch his head." 2 Arkansas state troopers will swear under oath that they have seen Clinton under the influence of drugs when he was governor. Charlene Wilson is a bartender who ended up serving time on drug charges and cooperating with drug investigators. She told a federal grand jury she saw Clinton and his younger brother snort cocaine together in 1979. Jack McCoy, a Democratic state representative, a Clinton supporter, told the Sunday Telegraph that he could remember going into the governor's conference room once and it reeked of marijuana. Historian Roger Morris, in his book Partners in Power, quotes several law enforcement officials who say they had seen and knew of Clinton's drug use. One-time apartment manager Jane Parks claims that in 1984, she could listen through the wall as Bill and Roger Clinton, in a room adjoining hers, discussed the quality of the drugs that they were taking. Hillary Clinton makes a $44,000 profit on a $2,000 investment in a cellular phone franchise deal that involves taking advantage of the FCC's preference for locals, minorities, and women. The franchise is almost immediately flipped into the cellular giant McCaw. A drug pilot brings a Cessna 210 full of cocaine into eastern Arkansas, where he is met by his pickup, a state trooper in a marked police car. Arkansas, the pilot will recall years later, was a very good place to load and unload. And then, of course, we shift gears into Vince Foster. According to Vince's wife, security operative Jerry Parks delivers large sums of money from Mena Airport to Vince Foster at a Kmart parking lot. Mrs. Parks discovered this when she opens her car trunk one day and finds so much cash that she has to sit on the trunk to close it again. She asks her husband whether he is dealing drugs, and he allegedly explains that Foster paid him $1,000 for each trip he took to Mena. Parks said he didn't know what they were doing and didn't care to know. He told me to forget what I'd seen. Later, Evans Pritchard will write, Foster was using him as a kind of operative to collect sensitive information on things and do sensitive jobs. Some of this appears to have been done on behalf of Hillary Clinton. Foster told him that Hillary wanted it done. Now, my understanding is that she wanted to know how vulnerable he would be in a presidential race on the question of, how shall I put this, his appetites. Hillary Clinton quietly lobbies on behalf of the Contras and against groups that and individuals opposing them, and Dan Lassiter's parties become known around Little Rock for the availability of cocaine and women. This is just unbelievable, folks. This is their life, okay? Judy Gibbs, a model and call girl who appeared in Penthouse magazine, runs a powerful house of prostitution in Fordyce with her sister Sharon. They also blackmail some of their more powerful clients. Both her family and one of the Clintons' bodyguards will later link Judy Gibbs to the governor. She decides to cooperate with police in an investigation of Arkansas cocaine trafficking, but is burned to death inside her home from a fire of undetermined origin. In 1999, Newsmax will report former Clinton bodyguard Barry Spivey had become something of a mystery man who insisted on meeting Paula Jones' investigator, Rick Lambert, on a deserted road nestled deep in the Arkansas backwoods. Is that Andy again? Andy, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, boss. You still there?
I'm still here.
Hey. No, dude, you're dead, man.
What?
You're dead. You're Clinton. You're a Clinton corpse.
Oh, really?
And you just exposed the shit out of these guys. Excuse the language. My bad. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No, you just exposed these people for who they are. We know who they are.
Yeah.
No, man. I fear for your life right now, bro.
That's all right. Don't worry about it. I got John protecting me.
No. Hey, listen. Yeah. You keep putting this out there. You keep putting this out there because you know why? You're not the biggest, broadest person out there being heard right now, but you're being heard, and that's what really matters. These people, all these idiots who are just living their life and waking up every morning and going to baseball practice and all that stuff, they're just waking up. They're never going to hear this. But the people that do hear it are going to spread the word. And I'm going to spread the word. And I really think, man, you just signed your death warrant, my friend. I'm sorry, dude.
No,
you're like Seth Rich.
No, I've been doing this for 11 plus years, man, and I'm still alive. So, and by the way, I was talking about them long before now. So they're not coming after me. You know, I'm nobody. But that's our, you know, they can come in, they can file suit against me, they can send their hit teams, they can do whatever they want to do, okay? But, you know.
Hey, but if you're rolling the truth, can't nobody come after you. Because the truth is the truth. And that's what RBN does. That's what RBN does.
I know.
Gives the truth. I love this station. I love this network.
All right.
You guys are awesome. Anyway, thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Andy. Appreciate you calling back. Anyway, Rick Lambert on a deserted road nestles deep in the Arkansas backwoods. The Jones investigator admitted that he was none too comfortable with the situation. Spivey shared a story about the conversation he had with Clinton while on a flight over southeast Arkansas. The trooper noticed a blackened patch amidst the greenery below that surprisingly Clinton recognized. That patch was all that was left of an estate that had burned to the ground in the mid-80s. According to the trooper, Clinton began reminiscing about rumors of his involvement with the woman of the house, a one-time penthouse pet. Her husband, Spivey, said, was involved in a pornography ring. Clinton explained to Spivey, "You know that mansion just burned down right on top of them." Years later, Spivey remains struck by one thing, the eerie expression that crossed Clinton's face as he spoke those words. The sudden and or violent deaths of persons connected in some way to the Clinton machine have been at best shoddily investigated by public officials. I've done shows on this in the past, folks, as you know. It is impossible in many cases to determine which are the result of foul play and which are coincidental. Barbara Wise is a case in point. This woman, who partially nude body was found in the Commerce Department, has been described by some as being a highly disturbed person whose death may be totally unrelated to the Clinton scandals. In cases of foul play, readers are warned not to leap to conclusions as to motivation or potential perpetrators. For example, if Vince Foster was killed rather than committing suicide, it may not have been because of the shady dealings at the White House, but because public investigations of these shady dealings threatened to expose peripheral criminality, such as past money laundering, drug trafficking, or illegal intelligence activities. But let's shift gears and go up to 1980, shall we? Bill Clinton loses re-election as governor. He will win 2 years later. Larry Nichols, who's been on my show many times, will tell the George Putman Show in 1998 that he had met with the Clintons and Jackson Steffens' brother Will, or Witt, and that Witt told Clinton that the Steffens were ready to back him for another run at the governorship, but that he had to dry out on the white stuff. There are reports that following his loss, Clinton ended up in the hospital for a drug overdose. Journalist R. Emmett Terrell later asked emergency room workers at the University of Arkansas Medical Center if they could confirm the incident. He didn't get a flat no from the hospital staff. One nurse said, "I can't talk about that." Another said she feared for her life if she spoke of the matter. Newsmax will report Dr. Sam Houston, a respected Little Rock physician and once doctor for Hillary's cantankerous father, Hugh Rodham, said it is well known in Little Rock medical circles that Clinton was brought to Little Rock Hospital for emergency treatment of an apparent cocaine overdose. According to Houston, who told us he spoke to someone intimately familiar with the details of what happened that night, Clinton arrived at the hospital with an aide of a state trooper. Hillary Clinton had been notified by phone and had instructed the hospital staff that Clinton's personal physician would be arriving soon. When Mrs. Clinton arrived, she told both the resident physician on duty that night that they would never practice medicine in the United States if word leaked out about Clinton's drug problem. Reportedly, she pinned one of the doctors up against the wall, both hands pressed against his shoulders, and she gave her dire warning. According to Jim McDougall's later account, he and Henry Hamilton developed a system to pass money to Clinton, and then governor of Arkansas. I considered it just another way of helping to take care of Bill. With that, let's go to Murr in Wisconsin. Murr, you're on with Michael. Go ahead. How are you?
Oh, hi, Michael.
Hi.
Tom's address, I just looked up that facility, and we did this for Chris Cave, too,
to
track down just what it was. Now, I wasn't right by the radio here listening when you gave it before. You said he's in the the correctional institute or in the camp part?
No, he's in the correctional institute.
Okay, because you don't need the street number. It's a box number.
Oh, okay.
You know, box 5000.
Okay.
Pretty much everything else is the same. FBI, Sheridan Federal Correctional Institute.
Okay.
P.O. Box 5000, Sheridan.
Okay, so it's...
973-something.
Yeah, I'll announce it again. Thomas Lacavero, 66455-050 is his inmate number. And it is Post Office Box 5000, Sheridan, Oregon, 97378. Correct, Murr?
Right. In between there, you need the FCI Sheridan and the Federal Correctional Institution. You know, they like their stuff all official-like, or they might send it back to you. You never know.
Wait a minute. FCI Sheridan and what?
And then write out Federal Correctional Institution. They have it in all caps.
Oh, brother.
I don't know.
Like it won't get there otherwise, right?
I don't know. I mean, I've dealt with a few different things like this, and they are very precise.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Sticky. Okay. Well, and I also wanted to say, I put some links in here about Susan and Chip.
Yeah, I looked in there today. Go ahead.
I just put some more things in tonight.
Oh, okay.
But Chip Tatum and his farm and whatnot. But I remember back Louis Free, do you remember when he, the
FBI director.
Driving thing?
Yeah.
Well, that's when Chip, now they had a different radio station going then, and he said that that sounded like a Pegasus hit to him, that they used some sort of light thing, I forget what they called it, to temporarily blind him and made him go off the road.
Wouldn't surprise me any. But, yeah, folks, and I meant to mention this. Folks, go into the AmericanAwakening.chatango.com. Mer posts all kinds of really good articles on stuff that I reported on, or she posts stuff that I should report on. Both.
There's people, other people in here chatting, too, putting things, and so we're having fun.
Okay, great. How many people are in there? Two?
Four.
Four? Oh, okay.
Including me.
I'll try to get that up there. All right. And when I'm
all
doing
right,
I haven't got time to go in there and look when I'm on the air. You know, I just kind of go in there after the fact.
It's too distracting. I don't know. Who is it? Deanna Spangola. She's amazing the way she can go in there and she's ambidextrous. And
yeah,
she's
a multitasker.
So.
I know. I get sidetripped. I get in there, I start looking, and all of a sudden I forget what I'm doing, you know.
Well, it's a rare person to be able to do all that. So, yeah. I sure wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, all right. So, yeah, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it, Mer.
Sure.
So,
bye-bye.
So, let's see. A contractor agreed to pay my monthly construction bill by $2,000. The contractor put the figure on his invoice at a cost for gravel or culvert work. After I paid the full amount, the contractor reimbursed me the $2,000. I turned the money over to Henry to give to Bill. Once after I handed Henry the latest consignment of $2,000 bills to relay to the governor's office, he turned the bills over and over in one hand. Like a magician, Henry grinned. You know, he said, Caesar had his Brutus. Charles I had Cromwell. Clinton could profit from these examples if he crosses me. So let's fast forward to 1981. Hillary Clinton writes Jim McDougal, if Reaganomics works at all, Whitewater could become the Western Hemisphere's Mecca. Major drug trafficker Barry Seal, under pressure from the Louisiana cops, relocates his operations to Mena, Arkansas. Seal is importing as much as 1,000 pounds of cocaine a month from Columbia, according to Arkansas law enforcement officials. He will claim to have made more than $50 million out of his operations. As an informant, Seal testified that in 1980 and 81, before moving his operation to Arkansas, he made approximately 60 trips to Central America and brought back 18,000 kilograms. In 1996, the Progressive Review will report, the London Telegraph has obtained some of the first deposition in ex-CIA contract flyer Terry Reid's suit against Clinton's ex-security chief and now a high-paid FEMA director, Buddy Young. According to the Telegraph's Ambrose Evans Pritchard, Larry Patterson, an Arkansas state trooper, testified under oath that there were large quantities of drugs being flown into the Mena airport. Large quantities of money, large quantities of guns. The subject was discussed repeatedly in Clinton's presence by state troopers working on his security detail. He alleged Patterson said the governor had very little comment to make and was just listening to what was being said. Sometimes it's better to say nothing, folks. Roger Morris and Sally Denton, Penthouse Magazine. Seal's legacy includes more than 2,000 newly discovered documents that now verify and quantify much of what previously had only been suspicion, conjecture, and legend. The documents confirm that from 1981 until his brutal death in 1986, Barry Seal carried on one of the most lucrative, extensive, and brazen operations in the history of the international drug trade, and that he did it with the evident complicity, if not collusion, of elements of the United States government, apparently with the acquiescence of Ronald Reagan's administration, impunity from any subsequent exposure by George Bush's administration, and under the usually acute political nose of then Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton. Mena State Police investigator Russell Welch will later describe the airport, pointing to one hangar he says is owned by a man who doesn't exist in history back past a safe house in Baltimore in 1972. Another is owned by someone who smuggled heroin through Laos back in the 70s. And still another is owned by a guy who just went bankrupt. So what's he do? Flies to Europe for more money. Welch points out to half a dozen Fokker aircraft parked on the apron, noting that the DEA's been tracking those planes back and forth to Colombia for a while now. Oh, let's see if I can make it through 1982 before the show. Yeah, we'll go through 1982. I'm gonna continue with this tomorrow night, I think. This is really good. A DEA report. This is 1982, folks. A DEA report uncovered by Ambrose Evans Pritchard will cite an informant claiming that a key Arkansas figure and backer of Clinton smuggles cocaine from Columbia, South America, inside racehorses to Hot Springs. I'm trying to visually how would... Well, never mind. I'm not going to go there.
You can figure it out for yourself, folks. The London Telegraph's Ambrose Evans Pritchard writes, Basil Abbott, a convicted drug pilot, says that he flew a Cessna 210 full of cocaine into Marianna in eastern Arkansas in the spring of 1982. The aircraft was welcomed by an Arkansas street trooper in a marked police car. Arkansas was a very good place to load and unload, he said. IRS agents William Duncan and an Arkansas state police investigator take their evidence concerning drug trafficking in MENA to U.S. Attorney Asa Hutchinson. They ask for 20 witnesses to be subpoenaed before the grand jury. Hutchinson chose only three. According to reporter Mara Leverett, the three appeared before the grand jury, but afterwards two of them also expressed surprise at how their questioning was handled. One, a secretary at Rich Mountain Aviation, had given Duncan sworn statements about money laundering at the company, transcripts of which Duncan had provided to Hutchinson. But when the woman left the jury room, she complained that Hutchinson had asked her nothing about the crime or the sworn statement she'd given to Duncan. As Duncan later testified, she basically said that she was allowed to give her name, address, position, and not much else. The other angry witness was a banker who had, in Duncan's words, provided a significant amount of evidence relating to the money laundering operation. And according to Duncan, he too emerged from the jury room complaining that he was not allowed to provide the evidence that he wanted to provide to the grand jury. Roger Morris and Sally Denton, Penthouse Magazine, according to IRS criminal investigator Duncan, secretaries at the MENA airport told him that when Seal flew into MENA, there would be stacks of cash to be taken to the bank and laundered, and one secretary told them that she was ordered to obtain numerous cashier's checks, each in an amount just under $10,000, at various banks in MENA and surrounding communities to avoid filing the federal currency transaction reports required for all bank transactions that exceed the limit. Bank tellers testified before a federal grand jury that in November of 1982, a MENA airport employee carried a suitcase containing more than $70,000 into one bank. The bank officer went down to the teller lines, handing out the stacks of $1,000 bills, and got the cashier's check. Law enforcement sources confirmed that hundreds of thousands of dollars were laundered from 1981 to 1983 just in a few small banks near MENA, and that millions more from Seal's operation were laundered elsewhere in Arkansas and the nation. And then guess what happened, folks? Bill Clinton wins back the governorship. Yay! Financial General changes its name to First American, and Clark Clifford is appointed chairman of BCCI. Fronts begin acquiring controlling interests in banks and other American financial institutions. In Arkansas, Jim McDougal purchases Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan. Oh my gosh, I'm not even halfway through this. What time is it? I've got about a minute left. Okay, I'm going to stop there, but I'm going to write this down, folks. We're only up to 1983, and how many crimes have been committed? You know, and this is, and you know what? This is 2017, and surprisingly enough, it's still going on. How could you do this on your own? How many people have to be in collusion with this guy? Okay, criminals investigating criminals. Remember that show the other night? I stand by it. All right, and don't worry, Andy, I'll make it home tonight. So, that being said, I'm going to close this shop up before the music hits, because I'm running out of water, and I'm running out of I have much to say, but I'm wearing out here, folks. So I'm just absolutely appalled. I am just more than appalled that these people can operate for this long, and they're still in operation today, even though it's behind the scenes. You know, they're not front on the radar right now, but they're still there, and they're not in prison. Yet we have people like Tom Lacovara and the Bundys that are. What's wrong with this equation? I hear the music. See you same time, same station tomorrow night. I'll start with 1983. Good night for now, and stay out of trouble, folks. Bye.
With doubt, there's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price, and I'll keep paying.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product! It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.